What's up, guys? This is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week, I interviewed one of the top coaches in the CrossFit community, Ben Bergeron. We talk about how to become a better leader, business owner, and coach, as well as the biggest mistake that people are making, athletes are making in their training. This one's just packed full of ways that you can become a better person and leader, as well as a better athlete. Enjoy the show. All right, what's up, man?
Hey.
Thanks for joining me, dude.
Glad to be here.
So I'm curious, you've got several businesses. You've got, is it two kids?
Four kids.
Four kids, Jesus. Okay, you've got four kids, you've got a wife, and you are one of the busiest coaches in the CrossFit game. What is a day in the life of Ben Bergeron look, and do you have any kind of rules that you give yourself to kind of keep yourself in check?
Yeah, I do have rules, and the day in the life looks like I wake up at 5:30 every day, get to the gym by 6. I take the 6:30 class with my at my gym every day. From 6:30 to 8:30, I hang out, maybe do a little extra something, but mostly it's just social stuff with the members, just kind of chilling. I coach the 8:30 class. The next half hour is spent just schmoozing with members. That's also when Katrin comes in, and I train Katrin from 10 until about 12:30 every day. After that, from 12:30, I'll either do some meetings with my box or other businesses or somebody else that wants to chat, and then I'll at 2:30 or so, I'll usually open my computer for the first time that day and start going through some emails. Do that for about an hour, hour and a half. Try to get some work in on the business as a whole, you know, pushing forward for some growth opportunities and better ways that we can pursue excellence. And then I leave the gym every day by 5:30 so I can be home by 6 every single day. Have dinner with the family, and then put the kids to bed at 8 o'clock, and I go to bed about 9:30.
So you said about 2 o'clock you start looking through emails. Do you allow yourself to look at like an email application on your phone at all, or do you check email at that time?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's actually a new thing I put into place. It's basically kind of a Stephen Covey-esque type thing. It's putting first things first. So it took me a while to figure this out. And by a while, I mean about 7 years of running my business before I figured this out. I used to think that my business was – or the job was being on top of emails, answering those things as quickly as possible, having good customer service in that regard, and make as many points of contact. And what I realized was it's not. My business is I should be on the floor talking with members, working with my coaches, and having a real feel for the heartbeat of the gym. So literally, I don't even open up my computer until 2 o'clock every single day. I don't open my phone to do anything, no social media, nothing until 2 o'clock.
Why is that the case? Why is it the case that it's not the behind the scenes stuff, the the marketing and all of that kind of stuff, and it's more the interaction?
The business that we're in, running affiliates, is first and foremost about building community. And when you realize what community is, it's nothing more than establishing strong relationships. That's really what the heart of every community is. Mm-hmm. On top of that, every relationship you have, whether it's with your staff or with your athletes, the number one thing you have to make that strong is quality interaction time. So it's a misguided pursuit to think that the little things, which are important, everything is important, but the urgent things, the things like answering emails and paying bills and programming for tomorrow and the growing list of to-do things, all those are urgent items. Urgent items should never come before important items. Important items are things that are related to your mission statement. So for most CrossFit affiliates, the mission statement has something to do with changing people's lives, making people better, you know, creating relationships, a strong community, improving human movement. None of those things happen behind a computer. They always happen with you on the coaching floor. Mm-hmm.
What kind of things do you, and this might be a little too technical, but what kind of things do you delegate? What kind of urgent things do you delegate to your staff members?
It took me a while to figure out how to do that. When I was running the gym and I was about 150 members, I didn't delegate anything. I did every single task in the job in the affiliate. From 150 to 225 members, things took a major shift, and all of a sudden you're running a business, not this kind of like really enjoyable hobby. When that happened, that's where I started to realize like I needed to learn how to delegate and manage people, and I didn't do it well in the beginning. Over the last 5, 6, 7 years, I've worked really hard to become more of a manager and a leader, to the point where I try to delegate everything. So I've created this, I've reorganized my business where I am no longer, I used to be the CEO, the CMO, the COO, and the CFO, in charge of marketing, operations, and finance. And then people would do tasks underneath me. I've since reorganized that, where now I am what's a position that's different, and it works really well for entrepreneurs, is the visionary. The visionary is the person that's in charge of pushing the business towards excellence. They're the person that's looking for growth opportunities and ways the business can get better. From there, it's not my responsibility anymore to put those practices into place. I'm not holding people accountable anymore. I have other people in place that will do that for me.
Right. Can you describe your style of leadership? I know it's kind of a loaded question. Just take that however you want.
I would say I'm passionate yet hands off. I'm not authoritative. I am not a micromanager. Having said that, I also don't manage with complete autonomy, meaning I don't give people complete freedom. I try to put some processes and procedures in place, and then try to inspire people, I guess you could say, to want to do the work themselves. So I'm a big believer in making expectations known at the onset. And I'm a big believer in establishing certain core values. Once those two things are in place, when people know what the core values are that you're looking for, that you hire by, that you reward by, and that you're constantly reinforcing, and they know exactly what the daily tasks are, whether it's through systems or policies, once that happens, the idea should be that you don't have to micromanage very much.
Right. You said inspire them to do the work. Are there other ways? So you talked about establishing, what is the norm in lots of different ways. Are there other ways that you try to inspire them?
Yeah, mostly through through positivity. I know it sounds like it's kind of like sunshine and rainbows type word, and there's unicorns running in our backyard, but. I'm a big believer in positive reinforcement. I believe that people respond to positive reinforcement much better than they do negatively. So it's the same thing in terms of if you're coaching someone on how to do a front squat and you constantly are harping on them getting their elbows up. Well, you can deliver the same message by saying you're doing a better job of keeping your elbows up, or nice job with your elbows up. They're still, even when you say that, they're going to continue to lift their elbows up, but they're going to feel better about the situation. It's the same thing in managing, where I like to turn as many things as I can into positives and not harp on negatives, so people are more excited about what's going on than kind of dredging the next, fearful of the next potential area where they might get some feedback.
Right. I love it. Okay. So you've got four, or maybe even more now, very, very high level athletes for the top in the game. Comp Train, I'm guessing, gets over 1 million visitors per month. You've got one of the most recognizable brands in CrossFit. What does it feel like to be the leader of such a huge team?
I don't feel like I'm a leader of a huge team. I feel like I'm a leader of my gym. And the other businesses that I'm a part of, and then I feel like I'm leading the athletes that I work with, the four athletes I work with. In terms of the Comp Train, that's just something I like to put out to people to help them see what we're doing. I don't think I think of it as a leader of a big massive movement at all. I think the big massive movement is CrossFit that's being led by all of the affiliates and Coach Glassman and everyone else that's a part of this and spearheading this kind of fitness revolution. I just think that I'm a small cog in the wheel that's kind of continually turning and hopefully changing the world.
Love that, man. Let's see. There was a moment at the games last year. I was in the back with you. Matt O'Keefe was right around us, and someone brought over a phone, and they showed us the score, or they showed us the live stream, basically of Matt losing the games, right? Or placing second. You're there warming up Katrin to go and try to win the games. What was that like for you?
I think I tried to detach myself as much as possible from it at the moment because there was still a job to be done. You know, that's not the time to analyze, reflect, judge, kind of to figure things out. You know, one of the mantras we put in place for ourselves is there is no leaderboarding. There is no kind of trying to figure out what are they trying to test? Where's the CrossFit? You know, is this a... we don't want to get caught up in the moments of what's happening, particularly when I still had to coach Katrin through the next piece. So I think it was a little detached from that moment. I don't think I was really recognizing what was happening because I was a little still focused on Katrin. Having said that, stepping away and the moments after that, you know, and watching it again on ESPN and, you know, the stream and stuff like that, it's not a fun thing to watch at all.
What was the conversation, your first conversation with Matt like?
I don't remember the first conversation. I don't remember if it was, you know, in the athlete tent. I don't remember if it was coming off the floor. I don't really remember that. What I do remember is the conversations we had in the days following. And particularly the days following was a little bit, I want to give him space and he needs time to reflect on his own. Still kind of like I lost it. But weeks later, really, really positive conversations. He took to heart and he made changes this year that would not have happened had he won. He's going to be a better athlete for it. Whether he wins or not, I don't know. But he is going to be a better athlete and better well-rounded because of the experiences they went through. And it took him a little while to kind of come full circle on that. But I have no doubt that he is better for it. You know, he had some holes in his game last year. Not just like, it's not what people think when I say that. It's not rope climbs. He had other holes, bigger things that he could have taken advantage of and could have controlled. That were not controlled. He was not a professional athlete last year, and he's becoming more professional this year.
Gotcha. Kind of going along in that same line of thought, it's becoming more and more common for people to spend, you know, several hours working out a day, and I think a lot of people are under the assumption that is all it takes to become a games athlete. You just put in the time, right? You put in 3-4 hours a day, and it's only a matter of time before you're a games athlete. What kind of other sacrifices do your athletes make and do you make to help them reach these goals?
I try to have all of my athletes become professionals. What I mean by that is this is their one duty. It's their one task. It's their singular focus. So of the four athletes I work with, which are Matt Fraser, Katrin David Daughter, Michelle Atondra, and Cole Sager, none of them have any other jobs whatsoever. Michelle coaches, I think, 3 or 4 classes a week at her affiliate, and that's it. Besides that, Matt doesn't have another job or anything. Katrin doesn't have another job or anything. Cole doesn't have another job or anything. That's a major sacrifice when you have a hard time making a living doing this if you're not winning the games. It's way more than just putting in 4 hours at the gym. It's, you know, the kind of place I start is you got to be able to dedicate 4 to 6 hours a day in the gym. And then for every hour in the gym, you should be spending 30 minutes recovering. So if you're in the gym for 4 or 5 hours, that's 2.5 hours of recovery afterwards. That's a full, you know, 7 to 8 hour day, and you haven't eaten or slept yet. So it's a major sacrifice to get to that level. The other part is, you know, it's not about just putting in the work. These guys, it's kind of, when you look at any sport, you don't see how, you think these guys are just gifted and they just put in, they're suffering every day and they suffer hard. These guys work so hard. They enjoy the process. They are not scared of being in pain, and they realize that that is the road to get there. I mean, it's one of those things that it's almost, I think from the outside looking in, you see these guys go through the workouts and, you know, you watch Matt Fraser do 16.5 and he has an interview, you know, 90 seconds later and he's totally fine.
Right.
That you don't realize how much pain they're going through in the middle of that. It does hurt really, really, really bad.
What are some of those methods of recovery that these guys have to do other than foam rolling and stretching?
One of the big ones we do is a Normatec system, which is this kind of flushing of blood through the body. It's I consider it like an oil change for the body. It speeds up. So if you're these are not hard numbers. I'm going to make this up, so don't use this as fact. But basically, if your body, your heart pumps good blood through your body, you know, and you get clean blood coming through once every hour, this essentially is what this is doing that 6 or 7 times in an hour. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of just flushing things through the body. So it's things like the Normatec. I've seen good results. I was not a believer in it before, but Catherine's seen good results with Compex. And as a recovery unit, we get body work done, whether it's ART, chiropractic, or massage. We do some meditative stuff, where it's just breathing techniques. And then, as you said, the foam rolling and stretching and, you know, the flossing some people do. But the biggest one that we've seen is kind of that the Normatec and the Compex.
Love it, man. I'll have to look more into it. So do you use HRV at all?
We have, yes.
Okay. HRV and how, what other ways, that's heart rate variability for those of you that don't know what that is. So you use that as well as what else to, man, I'm having a hard time getting this question out. How do you monitor when your athlete should back off, take a rest day or a deload week?
Yeah. So we use HRV, but we use it as an assessment for kind of a baseline at one time. And we have not gone, it's not something we use regularly. It's we use it to kind of see where people are. We use it to check out some sleep patterns, some recovery patterns and things like that. But we don't use it on a weekly or daily basis to kind of monitor that. Basically, and it's funny, like I talked to a coach from Michael Johnson Performance down in Dallas, who trains all these, you know, NFL combine guys and USA track and field, and he's way into that stuff. And he's like, and we were talking, and it's like you get the same amount of information from these high level athletes from the question of when they walk in the door, how you feeling? You know, you get that's literally before I give them their workout of the day, before I give them their training for the day, I ask them, how you feeling today? I find out what's sore, how sore, where's the energy levels at, how'd you sleep? And from that info, that subjective personal information, you can get more. And what this guy's thought process was, you can be 2 weeks ahead of what the technology will tell you. There's a 2 week lag in HRV based on that the athletes can sense way before that if they're trained athletes. So we've done HRV and we've done blood analysis as well. Blood analysis tells you everything from your, it gives us 35 biomarkers for the company we use called Inside Tracker. It tells you everything from the normal stuff you get from blood, like your cholesterol, triglyceride levels, fasting glucose, but also tells you a lot of good performance metrics like CK levels. For those in the CrossFit community, you know it is like the rhabdo indicator. Mm-hmm. Cortisol relative to testosterone levels, which is a really good indicator of stress. and then some white blood cell count, which is an inflammation factor. And we use those, again, to establish baselines, but it also tells us how fast these athletes are adapting to the training, whether they have outside stressors. And the company's really good. You know, I'm not a scientist at this stuff, but they're really good at teasing things out from seeing things like, okay, your cortisol is high, your CK levels are low, this liver enzyme is doing this, so that means that you're having caffeine too late in the day. You know, it's really cool how they can tease things out like that.
Right. Can you give coaches and athletes that might listen to this podcast some guidelines on, you know, for coaches, if their athlete walks in and says X, they might do Y, right? What is your thought process with that kind of thing?
So we do, I have a template that we follow for the comp train. It's posted on the comp train site. So we know basically what we're doing that day. From that, I have an idea of exactly what I would love to do in a perfect world. Now, if an athlete comes in and let's say Katrin walks in and we're having a max effort type Monday. Well, if she's like, I feel phenomenal, I'm ready to rock, we might go for a one rep snatch from a certain position, either from blocks or the hang, or maybe it's a legit one rep max snatch. If she's like, I just don't feel like I'm recovering from that big Saturday session, we might do some 85 or 90% work from positions, or we might turn into a more of a complex situation where she's hitting multiple reps inside of it, just so it's not taxing so much on the CNS. And even more so is that there's not this psychological thing of, I'm not where I should be, I'm not PRing, I'm not strong. You know, I want to eliminate that as much as possible from most athletes. It's a very West Side approach, which is let's work really heavy. You know, West Side guys can lift up, they can one rep max once a week for their lower body. They just change the stimulus, and what they'll do is they do the same thing with their athletes, is where they rotate through all these different implements with chains, bands, different positions, boxes, soft, hard, whatever it is. And then on the days that they're like, how are you feeling? They're like, I feel phenomenal. Like, they usually save that hoping for a competition day. But if it's that, then they might go for a pure, true one rep max back squat.
I love that. And people can just go to comptrain.com to find this template?
Yep. The template's under the programming philosophy.
Okay. I will link that to the podcast for you guys. There seems to have been like a huge shift in Katrin's mentality over the past couple years. What do you think has changed between today and say 2 years ago for her?
There was a huge change. She was what, I use terms that I call immature versus a mature athlete. And she was an immature athlete before we started working together. It was the scene that encapsulates the best is when she was leading the European regional and the rope climb workout came up, and her eighth rope climb, she failed it, crumbled to the ground and started crying. It's just like pretty obvious that that's not a mentally strong athlete. We worked really hard on getting her fit. We worked really, really, really hard on getting her in the right mental state. Mm-hmm. All the credit goes to her for that, because she is a sponge. No one understands how smart this girl is and how eager she is. She comes off as this just incredibly smiley, fun-loving person. She is so bright, so intelligent. She's a sponge for information. You tell her something once and she doesn't understand. She doesn't hear it. She doesn't understand it. She owns it. It's something that she is just like, you never have to say it to her again. And it's a part of her repertoire. It's a part of who she is as a human being going forward. She worked incredibly hard at her mental toughness, reading, tons of different books. And then working with, that's kind of like, as a coach, that's my jam. That's what I like to work the most on with my athletes, is getting them mentally prepared for competition.
What are the three biggest resources that you maybe gave Katrin or would recommend to others for mental toughness, and all that kind of stuff?
There's a book called How Champions Think, by Bob Rutella. That's probably the best book I've ever read for athletic performance, mental performance. There's The Way of the Seal by Mark Devine, really good friend of the CrossFit community. I'm trying to
It
think of
doesn't necessarily
another
need to be a
good
book either. It
third.
could be just a resource, a practice, whatever.
Yeah. There's a lot of things. There's a lot of things we do. One of the things that we do every single day, is before her training, she lies on the floor for 10 minutes and just
Nice.
breathes. So she elevates her feet. We do diaphragmatic breathing for 10 minutes. It's also a chance for her to clear her head and just think. So it's a kind of, it's part learning to breathe. It's part setting up yourself posturally, setting yourself so you can breathe efficiently. But more so than that, it's building a routine with just the mental component as a piece
With
of
all of
it.
this kind of stuff, she's a more mature athlete. Have you seen this change the way she is in everyday life?
Absolutely. Yeah. She's a more mature person as well. And I think that everyone that's close to her or everyone that's been in contact with her would say it. And she'll say right to you that she's a different person than she was a few years ago. She's very low drama. The first time she ever came to CrossFit New England was a couple years ago when she was actually James Hobart was her coach and James was one of our athletes. That's how I got introduced to her. She came to the gym and she had trouble with, I don't remember what the movement was or a workout, but she had trouble with it. And she, like I think a lot of athletes do in other places, she threw her weight belt in the corner and kind of pouted off in the corner. And I chased her down and talked to her about how that's not the way we approach things. And from that moment forth, she's kind of like harnessed this approach of a mentally strong athlete and realizing that, the champions are built in the mind first. It's not about your athletic capabilities. You can't be lacking in them, but you can have really good athletic abilities and not have the mind and not perform to your
Right.
capabilities.
What are the biggest mistakes you see athletes making in their training that's holding them back from progress? It could be they're doing something or they're not doing something.
So I think people are not realizing what they're training for. I think a lot of people think that they're training for regionals, but they never get there. People that are training for regionals but never get there, you should be training for the open. And the open training protocol is very different than training for regionals. The open protocol, the most important thing those people should be working on is eliminating their weaknesses. If you have a weakness pop up in one of those five tests, you're essentially out. You can't compete. If you need to be scoring, there was some analysis of this, but the average score of an athlete that qualified was in the 20s or something like that. It's just like you have to be incredibly competitive in everything. If you have a weakness that pops up, whether it's a movement or a strength or whatever it is, and you end up getting a 67th in one of those workouts in your region, you're essentially out. That's very different than training for the regionals. In regionals, you can withstand a weakness because it's a winner's reward point system where it's all about if you, let's say you can't climb ropes and you come in, 25th out of the 40 athletes at that level. Well, if you take a bunch of top fives, you can overcome that. That's not what you can't do that in the open scenario. In the games with the winner reward system, it's even less important about weaknesses. So it's really important to understand what you're training for. And then how to go about training for that. There's a lot of people that still think that they got to get stronger, got to get stronger, got to get stronger. And that was kind of solidified again last year with that one rep max clean and jerk in the open. I would be shocked if we saw that again. What that did to the leaderboard and one test of six being a max effort test, I just don't think we're going to see that again. I think we're going to see something very similar to what we saw this year. I think they really liked that approach of let's test people's strength, but you got to be fit to get there. That clean ladder with the toes to bars and double unders. And if you don't have, I don't care. We have guys in our gyms that can clean, 360 pounds that didn't get to the second to last bar because they're not fit enough. You got to be fit first. So I think just not understanding what the test is that, that you're going to have to take at the end of the season
And
is
what this
a big
does, what I
mistake.
see this doing over the course of 2 to 3 years, is it makes people quit.
You know, if they don't reach their goal time and time again, they end up just quitting. So I think if they adjust their goal just enjoy the process, they just start doing it because they love to do it. Like you're talking about, you try to instill in all of your athletes, it becomes a much different thing. And sure, they can still strive for regionals and the games, but it kind of changes that day-to-day mentality a little bit.
Yeah, if you want to go to the games, you gotta get through the Open first. You know, it's there's a lot of people that would love to be in regionals, and they train like they're going to be in regionals, and they do these short, heavy Metcons, but that's not what the Open is. The Open very rarely has less than 100 reps in it. You got to be training. If you're gonna, instead of doing, you know, short, heavy Fran with bar muscle ups, like, no, do double Fran. That's the test.
Right. I like that answer. What has changed in your beliefs as a coach in the last 3 to 4 years? Maybe something you thought was, you know, fact and you changed your mind, or just anything that's changed?
Well, that's one of them. When I used to train Chris Spieler, it was the point system in the regionals and the games was the same as the Open. First place got 1 point, second place got two, and so on. In that situation, it was eliminating the weaknesses. So I worked really hard with Chris on getting him stronger and being able to handle heavier barbells. We didn't do a workout ever with underneath 185 pounds, because if it popped up, like, you know, he would be in that system. If he got, you know, third, fourth, or fifth in the lighter workouts, it didn't matter as much as him just not coming in last in the other ones. So when they changed the point systems at the regionals and the games, that's definitely a change in approach in terms of the importance of eliminating weaknesses for games athletes. You know, it's still important. You still don't want to get punished with those bad finishes, but there's more of a winner's reward. So now with our games athletes, we train strengths more, because when you have a chance to take a first, second, or third, you got to take first, second, or third. Those cannot be seventh, eighth, and ninth place finishes.
I want to ask you a few like more personal questions. What individual do you attribute your success to most? Like who's been your biggest role model?
I'd probably say my dad. You know, my dad was a successful businessman before he retired, and I still use him as my sounding board for a lot of decisions. He has a little bit different approach to business than I do, but he's been, you know, very successful and consulted with a lot of he's a guy that I trust intuitively and completely with his advice. So I lean on him a lot. He's probably the guy that I would say is my biggest role model in terms of the way I approach things. And then after that, you know, I still wholeheartedly believe in the approach that Greg Glassman laid out with CrossFit. I believe in constant varied function movements performed at high intensity, work on mechanics, consistency, then knowing that intensity. I believe that what we do in this broad, general, inclusive fitness is the approach to overall health. I believe that it is more about intensity than volume. You know, I believe in this, elegantly programmed couplets and triplets produce the most power, which thus produce the most intensity and thus produce the most results. I'm a huge believer in, you know, a lot of the stuff that's laid out in that level one seminar, and that all stems from Greg. So he would probably be number two in the list of people that have influenced my, you know, business slash coaching approach.
Right.
You know, third on that list, and I've never met him, so it's a little bit farther removed, mm-hmm. would be John Wooden. I'm a big believer in the John Wooden methodology of coaching with, his definition of success. It's not necessarily about the scoreboard. It's about your effort.
Right. I love that. What do you admire most about your dad?
I would say probably most is that his kind of common sense and business savvy. He's not a Harvard Business School guy. He's not a Wall Street guy. He is a brick and mortar, and he's more of a blue collar executive, I would say. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that's been very successful based off of his ability to manage people and his understanding of business, not from a textbook, but from experience. You know, he started off, his first job in business was walking door to door selling typewriters for IBM. And he built himself up to where he was managing Wang back when Wang was really big, Wang Canada, and then ran Borland software for Europe, and then came back here and did a whole bunch of small business opportunities that presented themselves to him. So he's definitely a kind of same thing as John Wooden. He's all about putting in the effort, you know, and the sweat mm-hmm. equity is the most important equity.
Right. Love that. Kind of going back to the fact that you've got so many things going on. You've got the businesses, all the kids, the coaching. What is your relationship like with Heather, your wife? How do y'all support each other to be able to do all of this stuff?
I think a lot of married couples would say this, and I think we have an unbelievable relationship. We get along. A lot of people ask, like, how can I be her coach? Like, how do you guys make that work? And it's one of the things that we've never even thought about. It just works incredibly well. We respect each other a ton for the strengths that we each bring to our relationship. We've divided it up where I run the business and she runs the household. So she does, you know, everything from paying the bills and cooking at the house, and I do everything in the business. And we do the kids together. I try and come home at a certain time every day, and I make those expectations known at the beginning, and I try and hold myself accountable to those. But from there, we work really hard at being really good people. You know, it's like
right.
like looking at other people's, seeing things from other people's points of view, understanding and seeing things, gaining some perspective on things, and the thing that seems important in the moment might not be the most important thing. And understanding how to talk to people and all the rest. So it's one of the things that we put a fair amount of effort into, and we talk about a lot. She has a blog it's called HB Unfiltered, for Heather Burge Unfiltered. If anyone knows her, knows that she is very unfiltered, which is a positive, because I know exactly what's going on. And we talk a lot about, you know, what is the best way to approach things. We have a very similar outlook on life and relationships, so that helps a lot.
I love that, man. I think it was Brené Brown that suggested this. I'm curious if you guys do this. Do y'all make time to have do you make time either throughout the once a week or month or whatever to kind of create like a space to bring up sensitive topics or anything? Do y'all have any kind of structure like that?
No, we don't. We do, we set up times to do stuff together. We do a date night every other week and things like that, but that's not a time to bring up sensitive stuff. I think that doing that is well-intentioned, but I actually think it becomes forced and awkward. You know, it's like, are we waiting for this to come up? You know, what are we going to talk about? With Heather, it's really easy to talk about things at the moment. And truly, her blog is a catalyst for all that. She's feeling something, she writes it down, and it's for the world and me to see.
Right.
You know, so it's not like there's anything hidden. Awesome. There's no like hidden agendas anywhere. So yeah. One of the big things that she's appreciated from me from the beginning, she's told me, is that there are no games. There is no like mind games. There is no like, say one thing but mean another. There's no passive aggressiveness. It's very straightforward relationship. We know exactly where each other stands all the time.
Mm-hmm. I love that, man. Okay. What do you think your biggest aha moment has been as a business owner? And if you can't think of the biggest, maybe just the most recent.
A recent one was that I'm not running my business very well.
Wow.
I am a firm believer in the pursuit of excellence. And the way I think of that is every single day you try to find as many things as you possibly can to make your business better. And I was constantly pursuing this, maximize the day. As John Wooden says, make every day your masterpiece. And just try to give the members the best hour of their day and try to make everything as amazing and excellent as possible. And I never gave much foresight to what's coming down the pipeline, the future, numbers, or anything else. And I've since kind of had a paradigm shift and a realization that you can do both. My thought process in the past was, if I'm projecting forward, and if I'm worrying about numbers, and if I'm trying to do budgeting and cash flow analysis, I am using up my resources, time and energy, on that stuff, and I'm not going to have the energy, time, you know, the resources, time and energy to put towards this thing that truly affects excellence, which is the relationships with your members. And I've come to realize that there's a necessity to have both. You have to run a fiscally responsible business. And the only way you do that is by knowing your numbers, knowing what the budgets are, knowing what the, you know, your payroll is and all the rest. And where that will allow for where growth opportunities can happen in a responsible manner. And I think it's the natural evolution of a lot of small businesses where they go through this kind of bubble phase where they're, you know, CrossFit went through it. CrossFit went through it, you know, from the HQ level where they get this really loyal tribe. They get a lot of short-lived success. They pursue excellence. They try to do as best they can in the moment or for what they're doing, provide a superior product to their clients without the concern for what's coming down the road or how is this going to match up our, you know, should we hire someone else? Well, the hiring process, that should be in line with the financial constraints of the business as opposed to, you're a great coach, let's bring you on the team, you know? And
right.
It's when you look at it on a bigger picture of, let's get the right people on the bus, let's put them in the right seats, but let's do it at a time that makes sense for our business. It's a much more sustainable approach to running a business. And this is, you know, this is a new phenomenon for me. And it's one of the things that we have now created, you know, really strong operating budgets and cash flow projections. And we know a lot more about where the business is, where it's been and where it's going than we've ever known before.
That's awesome, man. And this is all stuff I'm guessing you teach in the Business of Excellence course, right?
Yeah, well, and unfortunately, it wasn't in the past because I didn't know much about this stuff.
Right.
And the business and the work, the course in the past was very much centered around delivering the best possible product, which is all about what the pursuit of excellence is. And it's there was stuff about systems and creating flow charts and clarity to the business and putting people in the right seats. The more management side of things is new to the Business of Excellence seminar. It's a piece that we do with our immersion group. That's these guys that come in. You know, we have three affiliates at a time come in for 2 days during the week and learn about the way we run our business. And it's a piece of that one. Going forward, it will also be a part of the business seminars.
Awesome, man. And I'll ask you a little bit more about that in a second. My last question for you, have you given any thought to the fact that you might become the first person to have coached the male, female, and team CrossFit Games champion?
I also have a male and female masters champion.
Wow.
So no, I haven't thought of that. I don't know if I'm the first one or not, actually. I don't really know who's coaching who. It's definitely something I would love to have is a champion in every category. I don't have any teens at all, and that's a new category. But I've had a male and female masters champion, a team, and a female champion. And then Matt and Cole, hopefully one of those guys can win it, and that would kind of put the feather in the cap.
Right. I love it, man. It's so impressive and admirable, everything you're doing, as well as like how you carry yourself as you go about doing all of it. You do it all as a good, genuine person. So
I appreciate that, Mike. Thanks.
I really respect that. Yep. Where can people keep up with you, learn more about what you've got going on?
Right now we have some stuff in the works. There'll be some stuff coming up. I'm not gonna plug that just yet, but there will be a single site that's coming up that will encapsulate everything I'm doing. But for right now, the comptrain.com is certainly where most of the stuff happens in terms of athlete camps and things like that. There's also the businessofexcellence.com, and that's where there's immersions and consultations and seminars. Hopefully a book coming out soon as well. And then there's, you know, if you're more interested in, or you have any interest in seeing some personal stuff, then there's and keeping up with my athletes on a daily basis, there's Instagram, which is just Ben Bergeron.
At Ben Bergeron. Awesome. Yep. Man, thank you so much, brother. I appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks, Mike.
Talk soon.
All right, you got it, buddy. Thank you.